All right, Evermore me. Tell us all about it.
Human grade was like pretty much unheard of concept at that point. It wasn't a concept that people understood. So we're like, why don't we just eat the dog food for a month to like prove this? We decided that we were going to eat the dog food for one meal a day. And we were going to live stream it. We called them the live feeds.
Oh, I get it. Like live feeding.
Before we even took like a single bite of the food, like this thing went viral.
It's CNN coming over.
It's CNN. Like you can still find it online. Like I think we linked the clip from our website.
It sounds to me like you need round two of this now that you're established.
Well, how about we have you do it? Do you guys want to do it?
What would be really cool, and I would never do this, is to eat high quality dog food for a month and then eat shitty dog food for a month and test the difference. But I could never do that. I can't put 4D meat in my body.
Yeah, well, if you want to eat our dog food for a month, we'll send you enough.
So, Hannah, first of all, thank you so much for being on today. I think I say this a lot, but it's not very often that we get, you know, founders of companies to come on here and explain this. At least we don't get that from the big corporations. So it's always very special when somebody's willing to come and just be transparent about what they do. So we really appreciate you being here today.
Thank you so much. And I really appreciate you for having me here.
Yeah, of course. So to get started, can you kind of give us some insight as to who you are and how you got to the position you're in now?
Sure. I'm an Aquarius. No, seriously though. My background originally when we started the company is I was a dog walker and trainer slash artist slash trapeze artist. So I was very kind of like bohemian chill life. My now business partner, Allison, was a health supportive personal chef for people. Now the story of how we actually came together to make dog food is a little bit involved, but I love sharing it. So another one of my clients, she was a little bit of an eccentric older woman, and she had what I like to call an underground dog food company. She started making home-cooked dog food after 9/11 when her own dog developed cancer. She lived in a neighborhood adjacent to where the towers were. And what happened was, is there was this cancer cluster in dogs. You know, a lot of people started getting cancer like 10, you know, 15 years later, but the dogs being smaller, sensitive animals started getting sick not that long after. Her own dog was given a 6-month prognosis. So she researched everything she could and she landed on cooking and herbal medicine. So she began cooking for her dog. The dog lived another 6 years.
And damn.
Yeah, I mean, the power of food, right?
Oh, and God, yeah.
During that time, she actually ended up kind of cooking for the whole neighborhood. She was also a, like, dog walker artist type. So she was cooking for the whole neighborhood. She had a slightly scaled business. She was in a couple stores. She got priced out of her neighborhood and moved into my neighborhood, where I ended up becoming her dog walker. And we had a pretty great rapport. A couple months into our relationship, she called me one morning and she was in the middle of having a stroke. So I asked her if she called 911. No, she had not called 911. I'm like, call 911. Who calls their dog? So anyway, I rushed over there and somehow ended up like kind of in this daughter role, helping take care of all of her affairs. She was supposed to get better within 6 weeks. And during that time, I was going to help her take care of the business. Meanwhile, Allison, my now partner, found out that her building in New York had been sold and was kind of drifting, figuring out what to do. It seemed like a good short-term solution that she should sublet at Mia's apartment. Mia was the woman. And that we would just like cook food for the short term and then everyone would be on their merry way. That is not what happened. Mia ended up having a second stroke and ended up not being able to like speak or swallow. And she was like fully, like she can move her left hand a little bit. And
wow.
Yeah. So we were kind of like busting our butts trying to get food to people because they would basically tell us, hey, this is a real tragedy. can we get our dog food? And
Yeah,
Allison's
sure.
own dog, Connor, he was 6-year-old shepherd mix, and he'd been raw fed like pretty much his entire life, and Allison would cook for him too. But there was something about this food. Like, he was thriving like never before. And we kind of had the state of the union, like, look, we want to do this, Mia. We want to continue this. You're bringing something really valuable into the world, but we kind of have to start over. Like, her business was a mess. Like, she never paid taxes or anything like that. And she was, she understood. And at this point, she kind of regained the ability to speak of it again. So we basically consulted with some very smart people, did all the lab testing, did what we needed to do to like legitimately sell dog food, not just out of the back of a minivan. And, 15 years later, here we are. 9 months after Mia had her initial stroke, she passed away. So, it was a very difficult way to start a business, but it also felt like there was this element of fate involved.
So, speaking of buzzwords, one of the big ones in the pet space is the human grade versus feed grade quality pet food. Can you talk a little bit about the differences in those and why you chose to go down the human grade route?
I mean, first of all, it was never a question for us going down the human grade route. We believe that we should feed our pets the way we should feed ourselves. But in terms of human grade versus feed grade, this has actually only really recently been defined by AAFCO. But basically, every step of the process has to be as if you are making food for people. So that means you're working in a USDA kitchen. That means that the ingredients are transported in a manner that, food ingredients would be transported both before and after the cooking. Cooking has to follow the steps that you would for human food. So if you're cooking, everything needs to be fully cooked. Now, feed grade, that's a whole other story. You can have meats from like dead, diseased, animals that died other than by slaughter. You can have ingredients like plant-based ingredients that are just rife with toxins, aflatoxins. There's really no limits to how disgusting the ingredients that can go into feed grade foods are.
Gosh. And so I'm assuming when you go the human grade route, that comes with an extra. A lot of extra levels of cost of time spent sourcing ingredients and getting them to you in a particular manner, and then the facility that you have to find. Like, it seems like there's a lot more time and energy that goes into human grade. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely. And I'm so happy that it's my business partner who handles most of that. But yeah, so much work
I bet.
actually. And I mean, we have like 20
Yeah.
something ingredients that we source. So it's about finding vendors who, it would be easy to say that you're selling one thing when you're really selling another because people are just like, whatever, it's dog food. So finding trustworthy vendors is a huge part of it. And, we do finished product testing. So that's so much more expense when you're testing every batch. Yeah, I like, there's just so much more effort. I can't even begin to describe the amount of work and love that goes into making a food like this.
So, how does Evermore address environmental concerns in your production and sourcing practices?
Because you mentioned the regenerative sourcing. I want to learn more about that as well.
Unfortunately, I'm just going to start with the elephant in the room, and it's something that a lot of companies in our space deal with, and that is single-use plastic, right? That is the one environmental concern that we have, and I wish that there were another way. We've talked to plastic experts just in terms of what the food goes through with cooking and freezing, and just knowing that you want a good seal and you want that food to stay airtight and safe for an extended period of time. There isn't currently another option besides plastic.
Well, never seen any other company in the gently cooked or raw space use anything other than the single-use plastic. So that seems to check out because no one is doing anything different.
And the company, I mean, there are companies that are have that are like smaller, more local operations, but the problem is that stuff gets freezer burned so fast and it doesn't really have that shelf
Oh,
life.
really?
Yeah. So, I mean, there are
Interesting.
options, they're just not good options. And I think glass is a possibility for a more shelf stable one, but also from like a shipping and transport standpoint. And it is sort of like a canning process, so you are dealing with higher temperatures. So that's the bad. I like bad news first. Let's get to good news. So one of the main criticisms of the pet food industry is that there's so much meat involved, right? And that's one of the things that's driving this move towards vegan pet foods, which is a whole other topic I don't even want to get into. I'm not a fan. Not a fan. But meat doesn't always have to be as environmentally devastating as, we're led to believe, right? There's this whole regenerative farming movement, and basically that is something that's been established on the idea that we used to have like herds and herds of wild roaming herbivores, right? The bison that roamed across the American West that you guys are probably familiar with, and most of them aren't here anymore. And they played a vital role in our ecosystem, right? Everything fits together. They played a role, their hooves turned the soil, their manure provided nitrogen, right? This was part of our soil system, and they're gone. And basically what regenerative farming is it's herding these ruminants around in ways that would mimic the natural patterns of what these herbivores, these bison or whatever the large animals are in whatever region. It mimics these patterns, and basically what it does is it helps sequester carbon, it re-enriches the soil, and it can really renew areas. It can reverse the process of desertification. So in some ways, this I mean, not even in some ways, this is creating a net positive effect. So if you move away from these confined animal farming and move towards this more natural process, it can really benefit the environment. And that's really what we're trying to do with our food is, use vendors that use these processes. And then with our produce too, one of the other things that's really environmentally devastating are the chemicals that go into agriculture, right? So we that's I mean, other than for the health of the animals, right? Like, we don't want to put chemicals into animals, but for the health of our planet, sourcing organic produce is really can be really important.
It's so interesting because I feel like a lot of the arguments in the world that we're in on this side of the pet industry is kind of looking back at what our dogs did in the wild and trying to recreate that with diet and mental enrichment. And I think a lot of people look at that as like a pseudoscience way to think about it. But regenerative agriculture proves that that is like a very valid line of thinking, because regenerative agriculture, just like you described it, is going back to what the land used to be like before humans fucked with it so much. You know what I mean? And so I think that, like, oh yeah, absolutely. But I think that's really a valid argument for looking at what the world it used to be like before humans messed with it, both plants, animals, and humans. You know what I mean? Not that humans aren't animals, but I think it's a totally valid line of thinking. So I'm glad you brought that up. It's really
Yeah, no,
interesting.
the Industrial Revolution really kind of just destroyed everything, right? It definitely changed the way we think about our planet and its resources.
I mean, even driving, like we've done a lot of driving and a lot of traveling, and we're both born and raised in Wyoming, and so like pasture-raised animals is very normal to us. Like
That's
people
all you
have,
see in
that's
Wyoming.
all you see. And I've seen videos and photos of like big factory farms, but it wasn't until we've done a lot of this traveling recently that I've actually like in person seen these massive amounts of land that are literally just dirt, and there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of cows on it. And
Just small little square fenced off
yeah,
areas
I
everywhere.
just like I don't know, I guess I just was ignorant. I didn't really believe. I was like, oh yeah, I've seen videos of that, but then seeing it firsthand, you're like, all I've ever seen is cows out in a field grazing.
With more land than you can even see. Like, you can't even see where the land ends. You know, it's pasture raised everywhere, but you get into the middle of the country especially, and that is not the case anymore.
No, it's sad. It's really sad.
Well, at the end, especially at the end of the animal's lives, like, pretty much all cows when they're born are on pastures, but then what happens is at the end of their lives, when they fatten them up, they take them to these feedlots, which can be, as you said, like so concentrated. And that's really where you have just sort of these concentrated production of methane, and that's, it's not good for the planet and it's not good for the animals. Like when you feed these animals like except all this grain, they're not designed to digest grain, and that not only is it really painful and awful for them, but it changes the quality of the meat that of the animal. Like the omega ratios of a grass-fed cow versus one that's finished on grain, it's like day and night.
It's crazy.
We used to use Niman Ranch beef before they had like a grass finish program, right? Like we, like any company, it's like you strive to do better and better and better. And they were very well raised. They were GAP4, they were pasture-centric, but they were fed grains at the end of their lives. And at a certain point, we made that commitment to switch to 100% grass-fed, grass-finished. We did some lab testing afterwards. We test everything all the time. We're like total geeks. But
I love that.
we did some lab testing afterwards, and the omega ratios like completely shifted. Like our omega-3s were so much higher. And it's just, you read about this in the news, like, oh, grass-fed beef is better. But then when you see those numbers for yourself, and the same with our eggs, like when we had like cage-free, like certified humane eggs. When we switched to the fully pastured eggs, like early on, we needed to supplement choline. These numbers changed so much that it completely eliminated the need for that supplement. So it's wild. It is wild.
Yes, I agree with that. The omega ratios. But I have a question. You said gap four, or what is that? Can you tell us?
Oh, I'm sorry. I go into this like assuming people know this stuff.
No,
So
it's okay. We all do it.
there is there's a couple of certification bodies for animal welfare, and GAP, Global Animal Partnership, is one of them. It was actually started as part of like a Whole Foods program for meat rating, and there's steps. Just in terms of, and the idea is like that companies can start at the lower steps and then improve their welfare and go up. I mean, a lot of companies don't. They just get the certification and stay where they are. GAP one is really not saying a whole lot. GAP two, it's sort of the animals are raised indoors but have additional enrichments. GAP three is where you start getting access to the outdoors. GAP four is pasture centric. And GAP 5 is like the animal lives their entire lives on the pasture. And you're not going to see that with poultry, right? Like chickens need to go indoors because everything eats them. But you will get up to GAP 4 on the poultry. But basically we are Global Animal Partnership certified for our poultry recipes. I think we're looking at it for the beef, but it really depends on what the producers tend to do. And you don't want to limit yourself to just certifications, right? Certifications aren't everything. Smaller farmers and ranchers don't necessarily do that just because it is extra cost in terms of what we're doing and who we're sourcing from. We've been doing high welfare from the beginning, and our vendors were already certified. And at one point, we're like, "Huh, we should do this, so we should can put those things on our boxes." But it like didn't even occur to us like 15 years in.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. It's always like we talk to a lot of food companies where they're like, yeah, like we were already doing this, and then we realized we weren't marketing that we were doing this, and we needed to tell people about it because it's like it's few and far between that companies are actually doing this. That's so interesting.
We're great at making food. We're like terrible at marketing it.
I think that's how I would prefer my pet food companies to be, because the opposite is why we're seeing so many issues in the pet space right now. It's good at marketing and not great at creating a pet food.
So, how do you guys at Evermore ensure that the formulation of your pet food meets various nutritional needs of animals?
So the first thing is the smart people I told you about that we consult with. We're under NDA, but I can tell you that they are respected formulators and veterinary nutritionists. So that's one
Amazing.
way that we do that.
And I just want to reiterate that for those listening. I apologize for interrupting, Hannah, but you heard that correctly. A food company, which many would consider part of the boutique exotic grain-free, uses a veterinary nutritionist. Because the reason I emphasize that is that's always the criticism of the smaller companies making higher quality pet food, is that they're not being formulated by vet nutritionists. And it's just simply not true. It's just a lie.
Everyone does. Like, literally
So,
everyone does. I mean, there are veterinary
yeah.
nutritionists who will, there's consulting groups. There's so many of them. Like, anyone who wants to start a pet food company, I see the ads on LinkedIn. Want to start a pet food company? Like, here's our group. Like, the idea that no one talks to anyone is insane. Or when we started out, it was like,
It's
we've spoken to a couple of
ridiculous.
PhDs in animal nutrition, and it's not the same person all the time. Oh, the number of times we get emails being like, who's your veterinary nutritionist on staff? We have four people in our company. We've put out four formulas in 15 years. Do you think we have a veterinary nutritionist on staff? Like, what are they going to do? Sit there 99% of the time? So
Yeah, we just need them to formulate the food.
yeah,
That's
it's
crazy.
again, it is wild what people are instructed to ask. So where was I? Oh, this is, I think, the more important part about making sure things are balanced, other than like getting your recipe, is testing. We lab test every single batch, finished product, and we do not only a food screen, a path screen, which is like what a lot of companies do, but we also do what's called an F9 mineral screen, which gives us all of the, basic minerals. And the reason this is important is we add eggshell powder and a little bit of zinc to our AFCO. We do AFCO, FEDIAF, and NRC numbers, right? And I think FEDIAF is actually the most important one. We do that finished product testing, one as like checks and balances on our kitchen. We love them. They're a small family-run business that mostly makes like prepared Italian foods, and we have a
Oh,
great
nice.
relationship with them. We go visit them. We like throw them like a brunch for, an appreciation brunch every year. But they're great, but it is a check and a balance to test the things that we do include to make sure it's being included in the right amount. But the other reason is that there's a lot of seasonal variation in fresh ingredients, right? You're getting fresh meat. You're not getting like your slurry meal thing, from some rendering plant. There is variation in the different minerals per season. Actually, and the big one now that everyone's looking out for is copper, right? You want to make sure those copper numbers aren't too high. And grass-fed beef should have does have lower copper levels, but that still fluctuates seasonally. Actually, funny story, and this is like a little bit of diversion. It's actually not a funny story, but we actually found out that we were being sold commodity livers by a vendor that we had, like, I mean, this is a really long time ago, but we were being sold livers that weren't grass-fed, but we were told that they were grass-fed because our copper numbers were through the roof, and we figured it out by testing, and we didn't sell that food. Even though there's no AFCO maximum for copper, we just took one look at those numbers and we're like, this is too high. We can't sell
Yeah.
this.
Well, and I think that AFCO not having maximums is one of the big arguments against AFCO because that's how you have things like the, I think it was 2018 when Hill's had that vitamin D recall. They had obscene amounts of vitamin D that probably allegedly harmed and killed a lot of animals.
There is a vitamin D maximum. So different nutrients, some of them have their
Oh,
maximums
got
and
it.
some
Okay,
don't.
but not a
Yeah,
copper
no,
one.
but that's even worse,
Yeah.
right? Like they should have taped
Yeah.
out that they were putting in enough to kill dogs. And it's like
Yeah, no kidding.
if we as this tiny little company can manage to test every single batch, like what is the excuse of these giant corporations? Like what is their excuse? We don't have a ton of money, but we're doing this testing because it's important.
So I'm curious, you know, we've talked to some raw feeding companies, and with raw feeding, there's very pet parents oftentimes have the exact same concerns about bacterial contamination and parasites and even things like aggression and behavior and stuff. What challenges do you face as a gently cooked company in trying to convince people that, you know, the fresh feeding is the healthier way of living?
Honestly, because we're such a small company, the people that find us are mostly already sold on fresh feeding because it's like you have to do research to find us. You have to like look at Sue
Sure.
Crichton's list or like follow like, really kind of not out there, but in there, like the sort of, I call them the
Yeah.
dog extenti, right? The dog experts,
Yeah.
the people who've kind of found our food. So I have to say, like most of the people who found us are on board. The three things that we have to deal with is like, why aren't you raw? More people are like, why aren't you raw?
Oh,
Or then there's the
interesting.
people Or then why aren't all your recipes grain free? Or why do you have recipes that are grain free? So it's like you cannot please everyone. Most of the people that we have to convince find like one weird thing to fixate on, and it's more about that. It's more about educating them as to like why we use the ingredients we do and how, for example, I've been on such a tangent about this lately, and feel free to cut me off. But
No, please don't.
one of the ingredients that we use is organic hyaluronic safflower oil. And seed oils right now are having a moment, as I'm sure you know, being in the wellness space. And I've done a ton of research on this, right? And I don't even want to get into all of like the nitty-gritty research of it, but any, like, whatever piece of it aside, when you come down to this, quality matters, and the reason something is there matters, right? We include this oil for our linoleic acid numbers. We need to hit a certain amount. It's an essential fatty acid, right? There needs to be a certain amount of linoleic acid in dog food, and the most efficient way to hit this is with a seed oil, right? That's just the most concentrated source of linoleic acid. Now, there's all these reasons why industrial seed oils are bad, right? They're created with solvents. They often use GMO crops. There's like, in terms of if they're being used in the way that we use them in human foods, they're mostly in junk food. In our case, we use organic, so there's like no solvents involved. Like, it is a cold pressed oil that is as clean as you could possibly imagine. And the bad things that people associate seed oils with are junk food for humans. So it's like you have to look at like why this thing is here and what the quality is. But the number of people that freak out because there's this like very high quality ingredient in our food in a very targeted way is just because there's this like trend going on online. It's just unbelievable how there's some idea will capture the popular imagination, right? And people will just like follow it down this path without stepping back and being like, hey, like what's actually going on here?
It's me. Hi, it's me.
Well,
Until you just said all this, I was like,
and it's not your fault either, though. Like, it's the genius marketing that these people come up with to like demonize this stuff, because you know what it reminds me of is raw milk. It's the exact same thing where for centuries we drank raw milk, and then what we started doing was we started factory farming, putting them in really small areas, and then you came out with sick cows that produced milk that made humans sick. And it's like, of course, the fix for that isn't to pasteurize the milk, it's to go back to raising high quality animals.
But what you said makes total sense. It's all about its sourcing and if it's
Yes.
made with other solvents or what kind of plant or
Whether it's
seed or
heated or
yeah,
not,
like that
how
makes
it's being
total
used.
sense.
Yeah, like, look, the seed oil that's in like the Greasy Spoon restaurant that's getting heated and reheated and going rancid is like very different from like the organic seed oil that you might be using in your salad dressing or to saute vegetables. Like, look, you'd want to saute vegetables with either a seed oil or an avocado. Well, avocado oil is technically a seed oil, right? Because those have a higher smoke point. That's why people use them. In our case, we use them because they have like linoleic acid. But you have to look at like why people are using something in that context and the quality that matters so much.
Yeah,
Wow.
On my
that's so
soapbox. Sorry,
interesting.
I'm on my soapbox right now.
No,
I
I'm
love it.
so glad you said that because that totally just shifted my mindset about seed oils and not demonizing anything that is a seed oil.
Well, and
So
we were even talking to Maria from Carnivore, and one of the big topics right now is the whole DCM debate and whether that's being caused by lack of grain or legumes or lack of taurine, whatever it is. And her recipe, she uses legumes in there, and she was like, "Look, two things matter. Number one, the quality of what you're sourcing. Is it actually a good product? Is it sourced well? And number two is the amount that you're using. If you guys increased your linoleic acid to second ingredient in your food, yeah, it'd become detrimental, but it matters how much you're using and whether it's high quality or not." It's such a.
Well, theirs are sprouted too,
Well, yeah,
right?
exactly.
Yeah,
But
they're
like,
sprouted.
that's just another thing is like, what form is it actually in? Is it the form that's causing damage, or is it something totally different?
Yeah, I mean the
Wow.
DCM thing, like I'm gonna step away from that one because there's where I'll get on like
I
a rant.
know.
It's so funny because
Absolutely.
for I mean, we know what the FDA says now. Like as far as I'm concerned and as far as all of the research is concerned, like it's not really an issue. I think they did a study going back like something like 30 years, and DCM rates have
Damn.
not changed in dogs. Like the rates of DCM
Wow.
have not changed. Whereas the amount of grain free and what was boutique exotic grain free foods on the market, I mean that's exploded.
Yeah.
That is exponential, right, in terms of that growth. You
Yep.
would expect the DCM rates to change along with that, and they haven't.
I'm curious as I'm gonna call these trends. They're not necessarily trends, but as the trend shifts and the narrative shifts, how does that affect you at your business? So like, let me be a little more specific. When you first started, I'm curious what recipes you started with. Were they grain inclusive? Were they grain free? And then when all of this stuff happened, did that shift what you were doing in, developing new grain free recipes or going to grain or anything like that? How do the trends influence you?
I'd like to say that they don't. Like, I mean, it
Yeah,
influences
good.
us in terms of how we communicated with customers or what our customers wanted. But like, look, we pride ourselves on just making good food, and we pride ourselves
Yeah.
on making good food in the best way possible. And we make our food, right? And if people want our food, they'll buy our food. If people want something else, there's at this point plenty of other options on the market. When we first came out, we had a chicken and beef recipe, and they have oats and barley in them. It's about 4.5% of the total formula. So it's not a ton of grain, but it's there. And it serves a valuable function in our recipes, which I can get into later. But they, people were freaking out about it. They wanted it to be grain free. Like, there were people who understood more and like, yes, those are good grains. Oats and barley are good grains. But they're the raw people. Or the people who were already kind of more on board with fresh breeding, they did not like the grains.
Yeah, I
And
bet.
as a small company, it took us a long time to develop grain-free recipes, just because when you're bootstrapping, when you don't have external resources, and believe me, we didn't start this company planning to start a company, so it's not like we had money to do a lot of R&D. So it took us a while, but then the next formula we put out was a grain-free lamb. And we did a grain-free turkey because we wanted those options. We wanted those super low-carb options. And when the DCM thing happened, suddenly the fact that we had two formulas with grain was, kind of the holy grail. So it's just funny. People will kind of go back and forth on their preferences. These trends will change. We're just going to do what we do, which is make good food.
I have two questions. One, where did the name come from? And two, let's dive into Evermore Me. I want to know all about it.
Okay, I wish I had this like amazing story for where our name came from, but honestly, when we were initially starting out and we were initially helping Mia out, there was kind of like a small crew of neighborhood people that helped, and it kind of whittled away really quickly as soon as people realized like, oh, this is a real thing and it's going to be work. But one of the people had a dog named Ever. And so Evermore, yeah.
Oh.
So and Ever was a great little dog. But I think I don't know if they I don't know who even they must have proposed the name. But Mia had liked that name when we were visiting her in the hospital, and I said she couldn't speak. But for a very long period of time, we were communicating by like pointing at a placard, with letters on it. But
Wow.
it fits, right? Like this idea. This
Yeah.
continuation, our logo's a heart, and this idea that you love your dog forever. And I like the more because the dogs always want more. Because we get all these people being like,
Yeah.
I'm feeding the dog as much as you're saying to feed them, but it must not be enough because they're still hungry. It's like, no, they're dogs. Like, if they like the food, they're gonna ask.
Yeah. That's
Like,
her mom too. Her
my mom
mom
is
pet sits for
always,
us.
she's like, I think they're really hungry. I'm like, Mom, they're
If
opportunists.
you open up every single package of food, they will eat it all until they throw up, and then they'll eat it again, and then they'll throw up, and it just won't stop. They're dogs. They're gonna eat
Stop. Yeah.
forever.
That's what they do. So I mean, I just think that there were
Absolutely.
so many ways that this name just like fit perfectly.
That is a beautiful story, though.
Yeah, I love that.
All right, Evermore me. Tell us all about it.
Okay, so this is like one of the best and worst ideas that we had. Back in when we were first starting out, and it was actually like when we were just about to launch with distribution to get into retail, I had no one. We were like, how are we going to get this out there? How are we going to get the food out there? So I had this crackpot idea that we should eat the food for a month, kind of like that Morgan Spurlock documentary Evermore or Super Size Me, where he ate McDonald's for a month straight and like documented what happened to his body. And I mean, it was pretty, it was gross. But we're like, in an equally gross turn, we're like, well, why don't we just eat the dog food for a month? Human grade was like pretty much unheard of concept at that point. There were like a couple companies few and far between, and the Honest Kitchen was doing it, but like really it wasn't a concept that people understood. So we're like, why don't we just eat the dog food for a month to like prove this? So we decided that we were gonna eat the dog food for one meal a day, and we were gonna live stream it. We called them the live feeds. You can still find them on our website. And for the
Oh, I get
rest
it, like live
of my
feeding.
feeds, right? For the rest of the day, we are going to limit ourselves to ingredients in our food. The
Okay.
only exception was alcohol and coffee, because if I had to do that for a
Yeah.
month, without like a glass of wine or a beer,
Yeah.
no freaking way. So, in order to get the word out there, we put out a press release just announcing that we were going to do this before we even took like a single bite of the food. Like, this thing went viral. And first it started like there was some like local newspaper upstate. Then it was like the Daily News. Then it was 1010 Winds, which is like this sort of New York AM traffic station. The day that it was on 1010 Winds, we get this phone call being like, "Hi, this is Jeannie Mose from CNN." You know that woman with the segment? She's got the voices like that, right? "Hi, this is
What?
Jeannie Mose from CNN. I'm listening to this story about you on 1010 Winds. Like, we'd love to come over to your office and film a segment." That was like this like scramble. She was like, "We'll be there in half an hour." That was this scramble to
What?
like, yeah. Like, so we had to get,
Oh
quote,
my
camera
God.
ready in no time. This is probably the biggest fight my business partner and I ever had, was just like
Well, and
getting our
it
office and
wasn't even like
ourselves.
you were filming for your own video. It was like it's CNN coming
It was
over.
CNN. Like, you can still find it online. Like, I think we linked the clip from our website. But it was, I mean, like I said, the biggest fight we ever gotten, because we were just so not mentally prepared for this. So,
No.
yeah. So CNN was like filming this segment at our office, which was, an apartment. And within like days, it aired. CNN, after Wolf Blitzer, like syndicated nationwide to all of these stations. Like, and you know how those segments will kind of like run over and over again on local news?
Yeah.
I had people that I hadn't seen since like high school, like Facebooking me, being like, "I saw you on the news." And it ended up in all these other like random publications. It ended up on like right-wing sites where people were accusing us of trying to like get children to eat dog food. I think that was on like the Daily Caller.
Oh,
It
come
was so
on.
weird. But anyway, it came in this wave, and we timed the whole thing. It was supposed to launch with our distribution, and we'd be coming out in stores across the East Coast at the same time. Our kitchen, this was supposed to be our first like 10,000-pound like big run. The head chef at our kitchen, this is not the same kitchen, this was a different kitchen on the East Coast, had to have like emergency heart surgery. So we totally missed this opportunity. Everyone was emailing us being like, "How can we get your food? I'm in Tennessee." And it's like, we didn't have a website where people could buy the food. Like, direct consumer food like wasn't as much of a thing back then. So we created this like tsunami of press, but could take like zero advantage of it. And you know how news cycles are. Like, 3 weeks later, yeah, what?
It sounds to me like you need round two of this now that you're
People
established.
keep saying that, and it's like, how do we do this again but have it be like fresh and new? So, or does it even need,
No.
but I feel like it does. You can't just do the same thing over again.
And that's fair. I think you could do the same premise, but I do think you're right. You'd have to do a little something that's slightly different. But I think
Yeah,
the
well, how about we
concept,
have
like,
you do
think
it?
about
Do you
the
guys
shit
want to
that.
do
What would be
it?
really cool, and I would never do this, is to eat high quality dog food for a month and then eat shitty dog food for a month and test the difference. But I could never do that. I can't put
Yeah, well, if
4
you want to
beans
eat
in
our
my
dog food
body.
for a month, we'll send you enough.
Okay, well, we'll definitely keep you posted on that. Don't hold your breath, though.
I did get my first quote in the New York Times from that several years later. So occasionally journalists would like poke around
Wow.
like after the fact. This might be like my finest moment. You could t I could tell that, you know how at the end of the articles will always be like a slightly funny quote. And I could tell that the journalist was kind of digging for it. So he was like, "Well, would your friends say anything funny to you? Like, what was their response?" And I said something along the lines of, "Yeah, our friends would ask us if we had the uncontrollable urge to sniff each other's butts." And that was what ended up in
That's
the New York
great.
Times. That is my
I
New York
love
Times.
it. He's
So,
sitting there and he's like, yes, that was gold.
yeah, I knew what he was looking for. But so yeah,
Yeah.
that was the probably, like I said, one of the smartest and dumbest things we've ever done.
Oh, that's so fu I love that though. I think that's just an example of people being like, I have this business, I believe in it, and I'm just gonna do something crazy to hopefully get people to understand it, you know? I think that's very admirable that you guys were willing to do something that I mean, had never been done before, you know?
Yeah.
It's cr so crazy.
Now I'm thinking how we can do round two.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, if you guys have any good ideas, feel free to let us know. But when you don't have a
Okay.
marketing budget, you have to be creative. And I mean, it's a good
Yeah.
thing that me and Allison are just like deeply creative people. So it kind
Yep.
of it was
Yes.
fun. I mean, the good old days.
So, for any pet parents who are interested but hesitant, what would you say is the first step to incorporating Evermore into their pet's diet?
And like maybe from especially from like a financial perspective, because obviously fresh food is far more expensive than what big companies have led us to believe pet foods should cost. So like how can they get started from a financial standpoint?
Sure, and I want to say like some fresh food is better than no fresh food. I know that this is what you both promote as well. And even as far as fresh foods go, I would say that we're definitely a little spendier than most. So the things that we generally recommend is, look, use it as if you are feeding kibble, use it as a topper. You don't have to change out your dog's entire diet to see really good results. We get reports all the time of people who are using like as little as like an eighth of their diet as fresh food, and they say they notice a difference. You can use it for an enrichment toy. I love putting Evermore in an enrichment toy, freeze it or not, and letting the dog just use that as an activity. When something is so highly palatable, it's just such a great way to get that food in and create a fun experience for your dog. And then there's rotational feeding. If you are feeding different foods and changing it up, you don't have to feed our food all the time. Put us in the mix. And those are just some options. I think again, little's better than none. And just like start off slow.
I love that. So you've mentioned that in 15 years, you said you've come out with 4 recipes. Is that correct?
Yeah, I wish it were more, but we've
So I bet. So what, I mean, what's on the horizon for Evermore? What do you feel like, what does the future hold for you and this company?
well. What we are working on now, and hopefully by the time it airs, it will actually be on the marketplace. Today, we are doing our final test run for cat food. We have two cat formulas coming out.
Oh, very cool.
They're going to be all life
Congratulations.
stages. Yeah, I mean, that's
That's
honestly,
awesome.
that's been the goal for so long, is cat food. Cats are so underserved in the industry in general, and especially in the fresh food space. My cats
Yeah.
have been eating Evermore for years that I additionally supplement, but we want something on the market that's dedicated for the kitties. So we're so excited about that. And then the next thing also is going to be puppy food, specifically a growth and reproduction formula.
So then I'm curious, and don't give away your secret sauce, but how does the cat food from a generic standpoint differ from dog food? I mean, my first thought is maybe higher meat content, lower veggie content. Is that kind of the general thinking?
Yeah, I mean, you pretty much nailed it, right? Cats are obligate carnivores, unlike dogs, and we do have some vegetable ingredients. And also, the other thing about cats is they're a lot pickier than dogs. And this is one reason why the market isn't as invested in cats. They'll eat something one day and not eat it the next. And it's most dogs will go from, processed food to fresh food. Like, they'll dive right in. They love it, right? Fresh food is intrinsically more palatable to dogs than to cats. With cats, however, big kibble, basically, there are all of these chemical palatants that are put on pet foods that the cats get addicted to. And once a cat has been growing up eating processed foods that have these industrial palatants on them, it is actually can be really hard to switch them off of kitty junk food. So we do have some special ingredients in there that provide flavors that cats love, and those are our secret sauce, and I'm not going to say what that is, but we're really excited and hopeful that this is going to be a formula that cats love. We know it's going to be good for them. And another reason why we're doing it in all life stages is it's way easier to get them while they're young.
Do you do any palatability testing? Like, do you actually test your food with cats before you launch it?
We're working on it. I mean, it's always, we don't believe in doing like laboratory-based testing, right? Like, we don't want to have our food sent to cats in cages in a lab somewhere, which, oh man, so
Definitely.
we get called, anytime you have a business, you have people like soliciting your business for their services. And we've gotten some like creepy lab ones. It's like, no, I don't want to do this. But so we've been doing some in-home palatability testing with our customers. A lot of them have cats and want to feed our food. And it's about 50-50. And if you can get 50% of a cat's to eat something, you're in pretty good shape. We've been sending samples out to our customers, and we give them these surveys that they have to fill out. The compliance levels are not as great as we would like them to be. People are really bad about doing paperwork, even if it's really easy.
Yeah,
So,
I'm sure.
I have my cats at home. I mean, they love what we've made, but they're also orange garbage monsters. So I could feed them cardboard, and they would love it. So they're orange. They're
Yeah, I'm
disgusted.
assuming they've probably been eating a food like this for a lot of their life too. Is that
Oh,
right?
I mean, they've been eating Evermore. The Evermore turkey formula is actually really close to being cat food. I just supplement it with thiamine. And so they've been eating our turkey recipe for most of their lives.
Okay, so before we wrap up here, Hannah, where can people find you and your company? I'm sure they're going to be very interested in this, especially for our cat audience, who, as you mentioned, is vastly underserved. So where can they find you? Website, social media, stuff like that.
So our website is evermorepetfood.com. Super easy. And most of our business is online direct to consumer. We do have some retail. So if you live in New York, California, or Florida, or Illinois, check out our store locator. We do work with select retailers, but otherwise, all direct to consumer, evermorepetfood.com. And you can find us on Instagram at Evermore Pet Food and on Facebook, evermore.pet.food. And we used to have a Twitter account. We don't really do that anymore. And we have Threads, but again, we're not really getting the vibe on that.
Us either.
Yeah, we gave up.
It's there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's great. Well, Hannah, thank you so much for joining us today. Again, we can't thank you enough for coming on and providing this level of transparency. I think this is absolutely lacking in the pet industry. So we really appreciate you being on today.
Thank you so much. And again, thank you for having me. I've been following you guys for a while, so I'm so glad we ran into each other at the Holistic Veterinary Conference.
Oh,
Yeah,
me
us
too.
too. Now you're stuck with us. We're gonna do a lot of things together. For those of you that are listening or watching, thank you so much for choosing to spend your time with us. As always, I'm Bryce,
I'm Kinsey.
and we'll see you in the next episode.